The prices on everything is going up these days. Even if you clip coupons, grocery shopping can cost you a pretty penny. Many people have begun gardening as a way to save money, eat healthy, and lower stress. Now you can save even more money on gardening when you visit garden.com and use promo code SAGMSHOW. You receive $15 off $75 or more for all your gardening needs. Remember, garden.com and use promo code SAGMSHOW to save on your next purchase. To find more gardening discounts, visit AmberMayShow.com.
It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do it right. Amber May Show is here with topics you like. Out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
AMBERMAY, that's fly. AMBERMAY, that's fly.
Kick it off, yeah. It's time to do it right. Amber May Show is here with topics you like. Out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on in to that Amber May spot. It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do it right. Amber May Show is here with topics you like. Out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on in to that Amber May spot.
Welcome to the Amber May Show. Thank you so much for listening today to the program, because what we're going to be talking about today is something very important to especially women. I can't speak from a father's point of view, but I can speak from a woman or from a mother's point of view. And we're going to be talking about how do we cope when we lose our children? How do we cope when we lose our children? And it's difficult. I'm not going to say it's easy. It's very difficult. And today on the program, I have author Dawn Roeder here, and her book is It Doesn't End Here. She tells us about how she went through losing her 2.5-year-old in 2000. And I'm so thankful that I got to meet her, because when mothers get together to talk about what they've gone through, you can heal. So welcome, Dawn, to the program.
Thank you very much, Amber. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am really thankful that I got to meet you, because you have an amazing story. And the fact that you're even here today, and you were able to crawl out of bed, and you're able to go to work, and you're able to live your life as best you can, is a miracle in itself. And I feel like that about myself. I have lost 3 babies. Mm-hmm. I haven't had the pleasure of being able to hold any of them. Mm-hmm. I was a mother for 7 weeks at a time, mm-hmm. and I've been a mother 3 times for a total of 21 weeks. Mm-hmm. 2 I lost in 2010, and 1 I lost in 2007. So it hasn't been an easy journey for me, especially last year, losing my radio show, losing my 2 babies, losing my uncle, and I'm even able to talk. I mean, when I think about everything that I've gone through in 2010, and I haven't turned to drugs or alcohol, mm-hmm. it just makes me think, wow, God really didn't leave me, because Amen. During the time of losing my 3rd one, I really felt like God left me. I was angry at God. How could he have done this 3 times to me? Did you feel something similar when you lost your child?
You know, I as you were speaking, I was thinking of St. Padre Pio of Suffering. One of the quotes that he has, it's one of my favorite quotes, is, "Suffering is a gift from God. Blessed are those who know how to profit by it." And of course, when we think of profit, not in the way we think of profit in the material world, you know, by possessions or how much we can get, but profit, you know, by it in the spiritual world. And I went through every facet of emotion imaginable, as I imagine, you know, our Lord, when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, had felt, about ready to walk towards that cross and die for a humanity that in so many sense had betrayed, had often betrayed him in different ways, not, you know, through the entire journey, but a humanity who really had bailed. And so I have felt anger, and but I can honestly say my anger wasn't geared towards God. I mean, I had anger, but in the heart of hearts, I think it's a grace from God that he had given me, that I knew that it was something terribly tragic that happened to me. A little background, I took a prescription medication, and I took it as prescribed, and had an adverse reaction to it. I had what's called a drug-induced psychosis. Talk about stigma, okay? In that phase of the psychosis, got behind the wheel of a car. How in the world do you do that? I don't know. I don't have memories of the event other than having placed Nathaniel in dire danger, and we were in a horrific car accident, and he died. Trauma, basically, the brain handles it by going into overload. And so we deal and cope with loss in so many different ways. I think I geared my anger towards Satan. I can say that. I was mad because death had come into the world. I attended daily mass. I asked everyone I could possibly reach out to for prayer. I surrounded myself with victors and victorious people, and you obviously have done the same thing, because it is a miracle to get out of bed when you have and you suffer a loss so tragically. A sudden loss is known as one of the most severe kinds of losses that you can have, because you're not able to work through as parents, and this is not to compare any kinds of losses, because we each deal with them and they're all tragic and they're all terrible. But when you have a sudden and traumatic loss, there's no goodbyes. You are not able to say goodbye. And so the fact that, yes, you do get out of bed every morning. I used to say the same thing. I'm like, okay, I got one foot on the ground. This is a miracle. I can very much relate to having to make a choice, an active choice daily, to decide which path I wanted to go down. Did I want to go down the path of death and destruction, which is alcohol, drugs, any of those temptations that can come along? And by the grace of God and fighting and kicking and screaming, I made the choice to move in the direction of surrendering my suffering to him.
You know, the first two babies that I had lost, I wasn't angry at God. But when he took the third one, and this one was an on-topic pregnancy, so now I have, my body has changed now from this last baby. The first two were miscarriages I had, but this last one, I went into emergency surgery. My life was on the line. The baby wasn't going to survive. It was about to erupt my fallopian tube, mm-hmm. and so they rushed me into the hospital, and I couldn't stop crying. I was just crying so hard because I didn't want it to be true. I just wanted it to be so young that they couldn't see it in the ultrasound, but they did find it, and mm-hmm. I saw pictures of it. I asked my doctor to give me pictures during the surgery, and I got to see finally my child that I hadn't been able to see. And so now that one left a big scar in my body and lowered the chance for me to have a baby. I still can, but just harder. And so I just got so angry at God. How could he let this happen? I've gone through it twice already. He knows the pain I've gone through. And mm-hmm. he knew the pain of losing my uncle. And he knew the pain I had previous when I just lost my baby a couple months before that. So I was so mad. I didn't want to pray to him. I refused to pray. I wouldn't go to church. And I work at a Christian radio station, and when pastors would come and give me Bible verses, I didn't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. I knew the Bible verses, but it just felt like, who cares? You know, God obviously doesn't love me because this is what happened. But when I really thought about it and thought about what was really happening, God, and I felt like God abandoned me, I realized he didn't abandon me, because I could go about my day and I could get out of bed and I could keep living, so to speak, even though it was difficult to mm-hmm. to get out of bed, or if it was difficult to go to work, it was difficult to put on a smile, mm-hmm. I was still able to do it. And then the thought dawned on me that it's possible that Satan himself just didn't want me to have any children to progress the gospel of Jesus Christ. I mean, I don't know why this has happened to me. I still can't answer the question, but I do know that God, that Satan has used this as a way to attack me mm-hmm. so that I will fall from the faith. So I'll just leave God altogether. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to let him have the victory in this, because the temptation of drug and alcohol was getting stronger. I would more alcohol than drugs. I would, you know, the urge to drink, to drown the sorrows was there. Did I do it? No, but it was still there, like a temptation to have. Mm-hmm. And then I read in the Bible all these women and men that lost babies. And the first time I lost a baby, Daniel or David came to mind when him and Bathsheba lost their baby.
Mm-hmm.
And how he reacted to that, knowing that he could go to his child, even though his child couldn't come to him.
Mm-hmm.
So his baby's mm-hmm. in a better place. His baby never experienced any pain and suffering or hurt of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought about, you know, in the Old Testament, how kings would slew all kinds of babies 2 years and under, and how they must have felt, and how God lost his own son to death, a horrific death, and how mm-hmm. God must have felt. So God knew my pain and was trying to comfort me, but mm-hmm. I was just not in a good place because spiritually I was being attacked, and Job even lost his children. So mm-hmm. all these stories kept mm-hmm. coming to mind, and Job said, even if he slays me, I will not curse him. You know, I'm not going to turn my back on mm-hmm. him. Even if he takes my life, I'm mm-hmm. not going to turn my back on God.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, wow, if these people in the Bible went through what I went through and they didn't turn their back on, why should I be any different?
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me also start healing and saying, okay, God's not the enemy in this case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about your story, about your book. You're an author. It doesn't end here.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your book.
Sure. Amber, it's called It Doesn't End Here, and I've just got so many thoughts from what you were just sharing.
Share whatever earlier. Thoughts you have
absolutely.
Come to mind.
Well, you know, anger, as we know, is not a sin. I mean, it's what we do with anger, you know, that we know is a sin. I mean, there's times where, you know, I had felt anger. I had felt anger, one, at the pharmaceutical company, the FDA. Anybody that was in the industry, you know, I would see a commercial about, you know, medications, and I would be angry. And I remember speaking to a priest friend of mine, and I said, you know, I decided to write this book, and the book is out there. And I wrote it for the purpose, you know, as a nonfiction inspiration, because it doesn't end here. You know, it really doesn't. We're here just a fraction of amount of time compared to eternity. But I was really wrestling with the fact that the opposing attorneys had handled the case the way they did, and that here I'm thinking, I'm in America. This doesn't happen here. Right. Anyway, you know, I'm in America. What happened to our justice system actually being a part of this system that I could see failing and falling apart all around me? And I would pray for the opposing attorneys because, you know, I had a problem with how they handled things ethically. And I spoke to my priest friend, and he really had some incredible wise words to me. He said that, one, he said, Dawn, he said, I judge people, you know, judgment, to have judgment is not a bad thing. We need to judge, you know, daily. We make judgments, you know, do I drive on this side of the road? You know, am I going to drive faster? Judgment is not a bad thing. And that he went on to share about anger, you know, that Christ had anger, as we know, in the temple. You know, here's the Holy of Holies being, you know, the temple being desecrated. And that that it's not a bad emotion. It's just what we do with it and how we choose to handle our anger. Anyway, that was kind of one of the thoughts I had when you were just sharing and pouring your heart out. And I have to say, you know, that's an incredible, courageous act that you yourself are doing. I don't know if it's partly because I'm Italian that I talked a lot about it. Probably drove people crazy. You know, it's like, would you just stop talking? But I did. I talked a lot about it. I did cry behind closed doors a lot, though. I think people, you know, I mean, it's hard when we have a loss, and you were, you know, just sharing your third loss and how difficult it is, and not everybody can really fully understand what we've gone through. And you know, there are some times where there's incredibly insensitive things that are said.
Oh yeah, big all the time.
And
but, all the time.
But I think of, you know, what I may have said insensitively prior to my having lost Nathaniel, not having had this this experience.
Absolutely.
I'm sure I've put my foot in my mouth more than once. Mm-hmm. And I try to have compassion, you know, as much as I can. You know, and when I can't, that's when I fall on my knees. You know, that's when I, which is quite often, or run to the tabernacle to just be in God's presence, you know, and he's the one who can handle that anger. He's the one who can handle that pain. There's nobody else. There's no drug or medication. Or, I mean, yes, I don't have a problem with medication. There are sometimes medications are necessary. In fact, I have, you know, regarding the trauma, needed to take medication to deal with things, but there is no one that can, or nothing that can touch and heal our heart as Christ, as Jesus Christ can heal.
Especially having a God that knows where we're at.
Exactly.
He's a parent who lost his son. Lost his son in the most brutal way I know of.
Amen.
There was no peace to how Jesus died, the Son of God. We tortured him. We beat him. We all seen the passion of the Christ. So we know, we have a visual of what Jesus has gone through. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we don't have a God that can sympathize with us. He mm-hmm. totally sympathizes with us. But then there's this other character, at least it happened to me, where he's just attacking me at my weakest point, not giving me compassion, but putting ideas in my head that shouldn't have been there, whispering things, and I took them, and I ran with it for a while. And the difficult thing about this last pregnancy, I think, is the fact that either way, my child wasn't going to live. It wasn't going to live in the fallopian tube, and if it ruptured, I wasn't going to live, hence it wasn't going to live. But at the time when I had my surgery, it was alive. And to think that you had to make that decision, even though either way the baby was going to die, to have to be forced to make a decision to go to surgery to remove that living child was really difficult. And today it's even difficult to think about that. Mm-hmm. The first two, they were miscarriages. The first, when I had, the baby actually didn't want to come out after it had died. Mm-hmm. And so, again, they had to go in and take care of it surgically. Mm-hmm. But this last one was just horrendous. And people don't realize, I think, who have never had a miscarriage, that you feel like you're a parent already. I mean, when does motherhood or parenthood begin? In my opinion, it begins at conception, because you're the first... You're the first bout of protection for that baby. You're the first provider for that baby. You have to mm-hmm. make sure you eat properly and you don't take certain medications or make sure you just keep yourself healthy so that the baby can grow up healthy. Mm-hmm. And you start having these ideas of grandeur about holding your baby and what you're going to name it and playing with your baby and designing the nursery. And all these things come to your mind every time you get pregnant. At least it does for me. And so you get really excited about that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a little confused though on the third, the when you were saying that you had to make a decision when the baby was still alive.
Well, at that point, it hadn't ruptured yet, so it hadn't died. It was where it was about to rupture, and by the photographs, I only had a small time frame before it was about to rupture. So it was about to die, mm-hmm. but at the time, it was just like on the verge of death, but it's just hard. It's hard.
Yeah, I not having gone through that, can't imagine, but I was sharing with you actually a friend of mine who is a very beautiful soul, and she, her name is Ellen Gable, and in fact, she has written a book, a nonfiction or a historical fiction on her own genealogy, and has her own, herself, you know, personally experienced that. And having read her book, and I am, Ellen, forgive me, I am drawing a blank on the title right now, but Ellen Gable, you can just Google her name and you'll get to her website. Full Quiver is what the name of her website is. But her, you know, her having gone through that and reading the story and seeing what she had dealt with, you know, spiritually, emotionally, is definitely, again, you know, it's a cross. It's a suffering that you're living in the passion of Christ. And I think that's one of the main reasons I wrote my story, is that sometimes Mother Mary kind of gets left out of the picture. in her own suffering. And she endured, you know, enormous amount of suffering, and quietly. And in fact, I begin each chapter with one of the sorrows before I enter into my own journey. And you know, we have the first sorrow being, you know, the prophecy of Simeon. I mean, let's talk about here we have our newborn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in my mind's eye, wow, you know, I think I'd even go back before that. Here it is, she's with child and can't find a place to stay. I mean, talk about, you know, feeling that, those feelings of abandonment,
right,
and uncertainty and anxiety that you know, we could all relate to. And that she is now with child, and they're in the temple, you know, and she's given these incredible words by Simeon that, you know, her son will be the rise and fall of many and be a sign of contradiction, which of course we can see that the living body of Christ is a sign of contradiction. Mm-hmm. in these very times we live in, and that, you know, she would bear herself, a sword would pass through her own heart too. And I think, wow, you know, here you're being told this in infancy, how much strength she must have had, but all, you know, she was human, how much concern she had to have for her son at every turn of his life. Then we have, of course, the flight into Egypt, which is the second sorrow. And you know, my goodness, we have our child, and we have the Magi that come, and we have this majestic, you know, thing that's happening with the shepherds, and they're bowing before this child, and Joseph has a dream, and they have to flee. You know, and they have to flee because there are children that are going to die because of her son. You know, because Herod had decried this, that, you know, every firstborn son, you know, every child would be killed. I mean, what she must have had to carry, you know, in her heart as a mother, and understanding, my goodness, here's my son, I'm leaving. I have this warning that I'm being given, and I can't warn all of these
right.
other, I can't warn all these other women.
Right.
I mean, to think of the anxiety and the just the strength, not as well, that she must have had to be able to carry this. And then, of course, we have the third sorrow, which is the loss of the child Jesus in the temple. How many of us can relate to, you know, when our child gets a little too far away, or, you know, we have that anxiety of, you know, here he's gone. He's not there, you know, in the caravan for 3 days. I remember thinking to myself, how could the mother of God lost her child? How could she? That doesn't make any sense for 3 days. And then, you know, you realize that they traveled in large family caravans, and somebody may have said, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, I saw Jesus, you know, he's with so-and-so, and this one said, oh yeah, yeah, I saw him here. And then, you know, they get a days away, and they realize, oh my gosh, he's not with us. And so there goes 2-3 days by, and here she finds him in the temple, and what does he say to her? You know, I must be about my father's business. Did she really even did she find him? I mean, yes, she found him, but to know that, you know, he didn't belong to her. He belonged to the world, just like our children. I mean, that's such a hard concept, and I know I struggled with that often.
That he belonged to God?
That my son, he's, you know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. And I just remembered I have to scream that sometimes just to get it through my head. It's like, I love this child of mine, but he doesn't belong to me.
And that's what I had to realize. This lady came into work, and she had buried her infant, and she had a miscarriage. She did have children that have grown up, but she's an elderly woman. And she says, mm-hmm. anytime you lose a child, the pain will never 100% go away. There's always going to be mm-hmm. something in your heart, a little pain in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
But you're able to go still about your life, because if you let it consume you and you drag yourself into depression, mm-hmm. then everything else around you starts to suffer, whether it be maybe you're married, your husband, the relationship with your husband will mm-hmm. start falling apart, or if you have other kids and you're not going to be the proper mother to your other children, work, friends, etc. Pretty soon you're going to be all alone because your depression has just pushed everyone else away. And she said what you said exactly, that all these children never really belonged to us. They were on a loan to us, and they really belong to God.
Mm-hmm.
And Mm-hmm. If they belong to God, then we need to trust him that he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that always, with all three, that made me feel better about myself is knowing that they got to escape all the pain and suffering that this world has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was, after I lost my second baby and I lost my uncle, I told God, I don't want to suffer anymore. Take all this pain away. Come back. Just come back in all your glory. Come, you know, I was asking God for the second coming because I didn't want to live anymore, really. I wanted to
take me home, Lord.
Go to glory with God. You know, I didn't want to feel this pain anymore. And he didn't answer that prayer. Mm-hmm. And
so he wants you here for something.
Yeah.
You're a fighter. And Lord knows we need fighting spirits in this day and age.
Sometimes I do wish he listened, but it's his.
I can relate.
It's his will, and he didn't wish to come right now. So, hence, life must go on. And the lady I'm speaking of, is her name is Blanca, and she has this show here on 1010 and 1280. And I encourage all you guys to listen in the evening time to her because she. She's a Spanish speaker, so her program's in Spanish. So if you speak Spanish, tune in because she was such a blessing to me that she was able to come alongside me and mentor me and help me get through the anger, the hurt, the pain, and understand where I was going through.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there can be a real taboo. And I know growing up in my family, there was no such thing as going to a counselor. You don't go to a counselor, you know, because our family unit is strong enough to handle this. I come from an Italian family back in northeastern Pennsylvania, and, you know, that was the mindset. And, you know, I'm just pleading with people who are out there who may be listening, who are suffering and who feel that they're sinking, that, and they've been in that state for a long, you know, a period of time, which was longer than normal, and to get the help that you need. There are professionals out there that specialize in grief, in traumatic loss, and there are wonderful counselors out there. And that's not a sign of weakness. That's a sign of strength to reach out and say, you know what, I'm struggling right now. I really need to look at getting some help. And I was fortunate prior to having lost my son to have had counseling prior to. I had suffered from sexual abuse when I was 12 years old. And it wasn't until my mid-20s when I had actually was in the middle of counseling, taking counseling classes, that that triggered for me some, flashbacks. I was basically in a small group where we were asked to partake in a particular group to, you know, observe. And here I am observing this group while they're talking about sexual abuse. And it just, I realized, oh my gosh, I can't hide this anymore. And I needed help. And I got help and I reached out. And it was very challenging. But having somebody there that has the experience, that has that specialization, that has to trust, that helped me in my walk with trust. And so, you know, with Nathaniel's loss and how traumatic it was, I was actually in counseling probably just a few months after the car accident, and grateful for it, to keep that balance in my life, to keep my relationship with God healthy and whole, because dealing with anxiety issues, dealing with that immense guilt that you have, or was it my fault, or is it because, you know, and like you said, you know, the evil one is, if you think that you're down and he's going to leave you alone, absolutely not. I mean, he is going to kick you as hard as he can. And that's a sad fact, but it's a real reality. Mm-hmm. It's a real fact. And those of us who are Christian and Catholic, we need to take that seriously. Ephesians 6, that we battle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. And that, you know, we to have that balance in our life. But, you know, it is the scripture that comes to me that when I think of counseling, you know, the Spirit of the Lord, wherever you find the Spirit, you will find liberty. You will find freedom. And so, you know, I sought out Christian counselors. I sought out, you know, I have a wonderful Catholic counselor that I still see today. And I am grateful to be led in my relationship, you know, and having that, you know, being respected that I do have an important relationship with God. But that counseling, when it's needed, it needs to happen.
What would you say to women? Because both of our losses were not something that we deliberately sought out to do. You know, mine were pretty much all natural. Yours was an accident in a car. Mm-hmm. But what about a lady who chose abortion and now she regrets that decision, or now she has unbearable grief or condemnation? She's condemning herself for what she did. What would you say to that lady?
Well, being I can speak from firsthand experience, I had an abortion in my early 20s that I deeply, deeply regret. I would encourage anyone who has had an abortion to seek counsel. There's the Rachel Vineyard's retreats, which were so helpful to me that I can't put into words. It was healing, non-judgmental healing. That's what we need, especially when we lose our child. And if we make that decision against life, I mean, like Mother Teresa says, you know, it's not only the child, but the conscience of the mother that is wounded. That is a very deep wound. Again, that only Christ can heal and bring healing about. And I had to seek help in that area. I went through Rachel's Vineyard. So I encourage anyone to reach out for help for somebody who deals with that particular issue. Because one, you're not going crazy. You are not crazy. Those of you who have experienced an abortion and maybe you're feeling guilty or feeling terrible about yourself or feeling all those emotions that come with it, that our God is a God of mercy. And he is a God of love. And when we bring that to him, I brought that sin, that pain in the sacrament of reconciliation. And but that was the beginning of the journey. You know, that was part of the journey. And yes, there was much healing that came through, and much incredible healing that came through the gift of that sacrament. But there was still, you know, walking that journey with other people who had walked it as well, so that you don't feel alone, that you don't feel that you're abandoned, because you're not. And that's what I would share with.
Before we wrap up today's program, share with us how we can get your book.
You can get my book through the website, itdoesntendhere.com. And it's also available, I believe, on amazon.com. But if you go to my website, that was created out of enormous love. You can go to the author's page to actually get the link to Rachel's Vineyard, and some of my favorite websites are listed on there as well. And so, again, it's itdoesntendhere.com.
Well, thank you so much, Dawn, for coming on the program. It's not easy talking about some subjects such as this, but I think there's a lot of people out there that are hurting, especially here in Arizona. We had the Tucson shooting, and One set of parents lost their little girl, and it's not easy to lose your child. So I wanted to get this message out there that if we've gone through it, we know your pain, and we can tell you that things will get better. Doesn't mean you'll forget or the pain will go away 100%, but it will get better, and life can go on. And we want to give you that hope and encouragement today that your child's in a better place, and in the best place that it could be, without any fear, disease, sickness, illness, sadness, just in a place of joy and happiness.
Amen.
And remember, instead of thinking about number one, just yourself, think about somebody else, number two, because eventually number two will look out for you. Thank you. The Amber May Show is a paid affiliate of Garden.com.